This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life the child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay. All right. Good to see everybody once again. A new face in the back. You've been here, you haven't been here?
Not here.
You come here by yourself? I'm with
Fiona.
Okay then. Alright. Okay, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so we just have like a meditation class on Monday nights. And yeah, just an opportunity for people to just actually do the actual practice, you know, for like half an hour. I like give a guided meditation, but beforehand just talk a little bit about the meditation path. Yeah. And usually it's a path of ever increasing like peace and stillness and happiness. And it's just basically we're just like putting the causes in to get the results. And sort of like like one of my favorite similes is when one of Ajahn Chah's similes is about the mango tree, and I'm sure you heard about this one. I say it all the time. So the idea comes from like you know, when we come across this practice, we don't get the results by having like a level of craving for peace and stillness. We don't get the results for like controlling and willing our minds to become peaceful or quiet, or we don't get the results by, you know, willing our mind to watch the breath. And this simile is all about just allowing things to like happen naturally. Yeah. And I just read quickly from Ajahn Brahm, like this success of a meditator comes from their attitude. Yeah. So, and it's like, you know, you live in a monastery long enough and you see like a grumpy monk. And it's, if you're grumpy, right, then it's sort of known by other monastics or other people that your meditation is not going too well. And if you're like depressed or, you know, all those negative emotions that you see in everyday life, that's like an indicator of the kind of attitude that you're bringing into your meditation practice. Yeah. So it's the amount of success that you may get from the practice highly determines on the kind of attitude that you have. And like in the Buddha's teaching, it's always like a happy mind becomes peaceful and becomes still. Yeah. And it's like, how do I get how do I get to this stillness and like inner happiness? And like I said, I always like this simile from Ajahn Chah about the mango tree. So yeah, do you know that one? You haven't heard that one?
I might have.
Remind me. You never heard that one? Oh, okay. when the monks, like the young monks or the lay people that would go to Ajahn Chah's monastery many years ago, and one of the teachings that he would give them is he would say that you've arrived at Wat Pa Pong, which was the name of his monastery, and in the monastery there's a mango grove, mango trees. I don't know if there's mango trees in Wat Pa Pong. Maybe there is, huh? There is.
Now.
Oh, well, I don't know. He was probably making it up, but it's really good. It's a really good teaching, and he says there's mango trees, like planted in the monastery, and they were planted by the Buddha. And when we think about like spiritual attainment, it's sort of like the fruits of the path, and the fruits of the path are like, you know, stillness, peace, happiness, insight into the world that we live in. And he says, in this monastery, there are mango trees full of mangoes. And all you have to do is just go to the mango tree and sit under it. And you just put your hand out, like Bill's been doing. He put out two hands because he's greedy. And he wants two mangoes instead of one. So you just put out one hand, or you just put out your hand, and then the mango will fall into the hand, all by itself. Yeah? And if you think about that, that's how we meditate. Just allowing things to happen naturally, but just having that, you know, like just having like a good attitude towards it. Not worrying about whether you get still or get peaceful. Just sitting down with like a sense of calmness to whatever's happening. Being relaxed. And just allow the mind to just show you whatever it wants to show you. And to be able to accept it. Yeah. And not fight it. Because I think one of the things that meditators, one of the troubles that they have is they have a fault-finding mind. Like us human beings, we have fault-finding minds, yeah? Like we look at something, we find fault. Or today is too hot. Or the government's doing this, I don't like it. The food is, like the monks are like, oh, the food is too cold. Nah. No, but you know what I mean. The mind starts to find fault, with whatever's happening. You may start to become sleepy when you meditate. You start finding fault with that sleepiness. Oh, I'm tired, I'm going to sleep. And you start complaining and just starting to develop more negative thoughts in your mind. So instead of like developing that negativity when these difficulties that come up in your meditation, we just learn how to like accept them for what they are. And that's like developing the right attitude towards the meditation practice. Just being able to accept whatever is going on. I think that's one of the keys to this practice. And try not to develop a fault-finding mind when you're meditating. Because a fault-finding mind is sort of like searching for, I think, perfection when you're meditating. Oh, it's not still. Oh, how can I watch the breath? Oh, what is going on? No, it's not working. And you'll notice that when you're sitting here. You probably start to say to yourself, oh, giving up my Monday night to come to this place, and I'm sitting here for half an hour, and it's not working. What is going on? And that's like the fault-finding mind, like arising within the mind. And that, I think in a sense, that can add negativity to the meditation practice. And that negativity is what keeps us away from sitting down on a regular basis. So we can get rid of that negativity and learn how to like accept what is going on. We can start to become, like, I think, more calm and more relaxed and more accepting of our minds in that state. And it's always like this, if you think about the path of Buddhism, is like a path of cause and effect. You know, whatever you give, that's what you get in return. So if you're meditating, you're giving like this fault-finding mind kind of attitude. What do you get back? You get a mind that finds fault with the meditator. It's like a negative, you're just doing something negative. But if you develop like a more like accepting, a more kind, a more relaxing attitude towards the mind, then what do you get back from that? You get more kindness, more acceptance, and more peace. So what you give to the meditation, that is what you get back. So at the beginning, you know, there may be a little bit of turbulence in the mind. But I think after a while, because these mind states don't last forever, these things will calm down and disappear. It's sort of like, you know, you have to wait long enough for the mango to fall into your hand. And if you start climbing the mango tree to try to get the mango tree just grows taller and taller and taller and more out of reach. So in a sense, like, the more you want peace, the further peace will be away from you. The less you want it, the closer it will come. Yeah, so is it like the meditation is like trying to develop like an attitude that has no craving, not wanting peace, not wanting stillness, not wanting enlightenment. And just giving yourself up to this moment. And then things will start to happen naturally. Yeah. And that's the beauty of this path. I mean, literally, you don't have to do anything. You just sit down and things happen. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Everybody enlightened? Okay, my job is done. Time to go. That was so serious. Okay, we can meditate now. Is it your first time?
Yes.
Yeah. Welcome. Okay. So I'll just guide everybody for I think the first 10 minutes, and then we can meditate by ourselves afterwards. So we just, one of the reasons why we have chairs for these meditation sessions is because we can, it allows us to sit comfortably for half an hour without having too much pain or too much disturbance from our bodies. We get to the point where we can sit so comfortably that we don't feel our bodies. We just allow our minds to center itself in this moment. Just being aware of whatever's happening now without craving for peace, for inner happiness, for stillness. Craving takes the mind into the future, and peace and stillness is not found in the future. Peace and stillness is only found in the present moment. So you're just sitting down, and you can use your body to help you help anchor your mind into this moment. Just like, what can you hear? You hear the sounds of the air conditioning. You can know that you're sitting in a room. You can feel the, you can feel the your weight on the chair that you're sitting on. You can sort of like use this body of yours to bring your mind into the moment. You can use your body to feel the temperature in this room. Is it hot? Is it cold? Is your body comfortable? What is going on around you? So what we're doing is we're just taking the energies of the mind that we've been using all day to think, to do, and now we're taking the energy of the mind and putting it into the awareness of the mind, the knowing of the mind. So all we're doing is we're just allowing the mind to flow naturally, putting our energy into awareness, and just allow the mango to fall naturally by just waiting in this moment. As you wait, you become more relaxed and more peaceful. And all you gotta do is just keep on waiting and waiting and waiting until the mango drops. Any comments, questions about meditation? About Buddhism? How was it? How was it for some of you? Good? Not too bad? So we had a weekend retreat here on Saturday, taught by Ajahn Janarato. So we sort of like trying to conduct them every month. So I think it's going to be like a beginning of the month kind of half day meditation retreat. And I think it was like 30 people in the room or something like that. Yeah. I was just looking around, there's like 18 of us here. And so the 18 is sort of like a nice number, actually, not too crowded. Yeah. People can sit comfortably. So I was just trying to, I was in the meditation, I was thinking about something to say and trying to keep it like focused on the meditation practice. And I remember before the Buddha became enlightened, he tried all sorts of different ways of practice. He tried to be anesthetic, he did the really tough practices, yeah, like eating in the stories it says eating like a grain of rice a day, not drinking anything, just putting his body through, I think the whole idea was like purifying his body. So that's, and you do that by not eating anything or drinking anything, so your body can sort of like purify itself. So he only like ate enough to stay alive. And then he figured out that this is not the path to enlightenment. And obviously the path of like indulgence, he lived that life before. As a prince growing up, he had like a bright future ahead of him. His father was the king, and he was going to take over. And the psychics in the time of the Buddha said that if the Buddha didn't become the Buddha, then he would have become a wheel-turning monarch, which is a person who would have ruled their country in a good way, wholesome way. So that didn't happen. So he had that kind of lifestyle, and he knew that that kind of lifestyle didn't lead to like enlightenment. So then he thought to himself, you know, what do I have to do to be able to get the deep meditations so that I can see what this life is all about? And then his memory went back to when he was a child. Just a little kid, I think, 8, 7, 9, 10, 11. That's all little numbers, right? So he was, I think at the time, he was with his father, and his father was talking with like other farmers on the best way of farming and how to produce the most veggies and fruit and stuff like that. And being a young boy, he wasn't interested in the conversation. So he decided, I'll leave these grown men to do grown men things, and I'll just go and just spend some time by myself. So then he went and sat under a rose apple tree. And he closed his eyes and he went into a deep meditation. And then he thought to himself, this is what the Buddha before he became enlightened is like, this is the way to enlightenment, through these deep meditations. And the point that I'm trying to make is that the type of mind that you take into your meditation practice determines the results that you get. And you could sort of think that, you know, the Buddha was trying to practice like the ascetic practices, where he put his body through a lot of like pain and suffering to realize nibbana. That didn't work. So then his memory went back to when he was a kid. And you can imagine what kind of like mind a kid has. They're pretty restless, right? They're running all over the place. you see kids come here, they don't sit still for 5 seconds, but their minds, in a sense, the minds are free, right? Kids, they're like, they have a free mind. They happy-go-lucky, live in the moment. There's nothing really bothering them, in a sense, but they just don't know how to sit still. But the Buddha knew how to sit still. So he sat still with like a mind which is not attached or doesn't worry about the future or think about the past. In a sense, his mind was young and free. And because he had that type of mind, he was able to go deep into the meditation. So in a sense, we're trying to bring that kind of like that kind of mind to our meditation practice. And another story which is very interesting was we had one of these monks who stayed in Bodhinyana Monastery, and the rumor that went around was that he got into a deep meditation. Wow! And that's like really, you know, that's something that really interests monks. I don't know what interests lay people. But there's something really interesting. And then this happened when I wasn't there, but he was like, he had this really deep experience, and he talked to Ajahn Brahm about it, and Ajahn Brahm sort of like confirmed it, saying that he had a deep meditation. And one of the first questions that comes up is, how did it happen? Yeah. And I know this monk. This monk is he's like he's like kind of rigid in a sense. Not very relaxed, likes to keep to the rules. You know, that kind of mentality. But he was a diligent meditator. And this was during the rains retreat, and he put many, many hours into the practice. And then after, I think, a session where he was practicing for many hours and nothing was really happening, he was trying to like watch the breath or push his mind further into the deeper states, but it wouldn't go there. So then what he did was he just sat back and just gave up. And that's when his mind dropped into like the deeper states, like the peaceful, nice states.
Can you get him to write it down for
me? So what does that tell you? You know, you have to be able to just be relaxed and kind of not control the mind and allow the mind to just go where it wants to. And then, yeah. Well, you know, you just sit down and you don't control the mango. And you allow the mango to go wherever it wants to. It may want to go to you, maybe want to go to you, but maybe one day it goes to you, and you just allow it to happen. And at the same time, it's sort of like, yeah, you know, you sit down and you wait for things to happen, and then you get depressed because things aren't happening. But that's not the whole of like the Buddhist practice. There's other things that you can you know, develop to add value to your life. I tell a lot of people, like when you know, try to keep like a consistent meditation practice. Yeah, that's all very well, you know, meditate every day, blah, 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 blah. I think another thing is quite important is try to like consistently keep positive mind states. And that will also be very helpful to like the mental development in your life. Yeah. So it's like one of the advices that that a meditation teachers give after a retreat is to try to find ways to keep up the Buddhist practice, and one of the ways is to develop positive mind states, developing generosity and kindness, and what you're actually doing is you're just adding the right ingredients for the peaceful meditations to arise, and then when you start to meditate again, it's a lot easier. It's not that hard. So next week, who's going to give the talk, Irene?
Talk.
No, oh, just kidding. I should kid.
We'd be here for hours.
Anyways, just a bit of news. Sukhakama is leaving us. He's going to Adelaide for 8 days, and then flying to Cambodia until April. Yeah.
Very
so.
Nice.
And then, so then we're gonna just have a few months come and visit us. And I think Chittapala will be back. You know Chittapala?
Yes.
He'll be back. Because I'll be going away for about 11 days. Yeah.
When?
What? And then we're gonna have, I think Chunda might visit us. He's a Malaysian monk. Who ordained in Bodhinyana Monastery. He said that he'll be coming here for a month, but that's what he said. So I don't know if it's going to happen. But we'll still be here. There's Monday night classes. And, yeah. Hopefully next time you got questions. No questions. No comments. Okay.
I'm just
going to
point.
Oh, there you go.
Just touch on what you're saying. For the festive period, my last class, 2-3 weeks I haven't meditated.
Yeah.
And I've really struggled.
Yeah.
But when I come regular and when it comes a lot easier and stuff like that. Just exactly what you're saying. You're trying to force it, it's not working.
Yes.
Because when I come, I'm going to do it for a week as well at home and stuff. Yeah. It's easier, but the night was really tough.
You haven't done it.
3 weeks without that.
Yeah, you haven't done it for a while. And this, I guess like when you find yourself in that situation where you can't really, like you're struggling because you sort of want something, but you're not getting it, so this when you have to learn how to accept what is happening, and just allow the mind to, just to get a bit of clarity, and then it'll just find its way back to, those peaceful states of mind. Because I always believe, like, once you know where to go, then eventually you'll find your way back there. Because the hard bit is to find the place where you want to go to. Okay. The monks are getting tired. more chanting. Who wants to lead the chanting? Lorenz? You want to lead it?
Yeah, Lorenz.
Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life, may they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. And through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana, in every kind of death, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor, May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, and surpass is the protection of the Dharma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these,
may darkness and disease